Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
In an election cycle that has perplexed and downright confounded believers, perhaps more than any in recent memory, one question is very much on many of our minds. As people of faith, how can we vote our values? How should our spiritual worldview shape our political views? Today, as we look to an uncertain future, we take a glance back. How has Christianity impacted the role of government in the United States, stretching back to our earliest days? And what lessons can we draw for today? To help us do just that, we welcome Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog on the road. He's an associate professor of history and chair of the history department at University of Northwestern St. Paul. The author of the new book, Patriotism and Piety, Federalist Politics and Religious Struggle in the New American Nation. Sir, the warmest of welcomes to you.
Well, thanks so much. It's so good to be with you today and talking to all of your listeners. I'm excited to be here and to think about how our historical background might even shed some light on our conditions today.
Well, it's tremendous to have you here, and talking some history is just one of the greatest, any excuse we can find to do that on this program. We love to do it. And this really is a fascinating book, I have to say. Whenever you read a book with over 50 pages of research notes, you know that you're reading something that you're going to learn something from. And I just wondered, as someone who is the conductor of all of that research, is it something that gives you great joy to sit down and do that? Or is it something of a nightmare, or maybe a little of both?
I think with researching, it's a little bit of both, right? You wouldn't do it if you didn't love it. And seriously, digging into this topic from probably the earliest days back in maybe 2003, 2004, I loved it. I do find it worth digging into. On the other hand, there are also lots of dry spells that you just have to keep pushing on. So perseverance is a value in scholarship and history, just as it is in lots of other places.
Are you a fan of caffeine? Is that helpful?
I find caffeine helps not only with scholarship, but with keeping going with all of my other responsibilities at work and at home, too.
Understood. A little more about Dr. Den Hartog. I want to focus in and hone in on the Federalists here, sir, and why they're so important in the discussion in just a few moments. But first off here, I wanted to ask you some of the questions that I think we've been hearing most often, interacting with what is truly a unique election environment and bringing your historical perspective to bear. Is that acceptable to you, sir?
I think I'll give it a try.
It's great to hear. I've noticed lots of focus this cycle in particular on the concept of whether America is a Christian nation. And some who answer that with a no then take it a step further and they say that, well, we don't really have any business bringing our moral compass into our voting choice. What do you say to that premise?
Right. And you said we only have a couple of segments here. I'm a little bit shocked because, of course, we can really dig into this. Now, I think there are two parts to that, right? First part, how do we understand the nation in relationship to Christianity?
Yeah.
Right? And so I will go on record as saying I think institutionally, constitutionally, the United States is not, quote unquote, a Christian nation, right? We don't have an established church. The First Amendment says that we are going to give religious liberty to all faiths. So historically, Christianity has been very important. I will defend that point up and down. But institutionally or constitutionally, no, I don't believe we are a Christian nation. Again, that goes to definition, but by my definition, we're not. But then the second part is, well, what do we do with that reality? And there, I think we can say, no, the Constitution doesn't give Christianity a privileged place, but what it does do is it frees up people of faith, whatever their faith, to have a responsibility of participation and of citizenship. And so Christians have not only a right, a privilege, but a duty to be involved, to bring their faith reflections to bear on all kinds of issues. You know, maybe that faith doesn't give them special insights into, you know, the exact tax rate policy or something.
Right.
But it does mean that they better be reflecting on this, because we enter the political realm as whole people, right? That having integrity means we don't chop ourselves up and act one way on Sunday and one way on Monday, but we're whole people and we carry the same person into the voting booth with us.
That's fascinating. And on this bleeds into your response, but on sort of the other extreme, there are so many who say, well, with the choice I'm presented with, I'm just not going to vote at all. Maybe it's I just won't vote for president, or I won't go into the ballot box at all. But you would seem to indicate that you would disagree with that assessment.
I've been reading even today about theories of self-government. And what we're presented with in this country is both the privilege and the responsibility to be self-governing. Our choices matter. It's a great duty to be involved. So without demanding what people decide, I think they need to be involved, to think very carefully, even to pray very hard about the decisions that they're going to make, and then to be faithful, to be reflective as they vote, and to say, I will be responsible for how I vote, or even my choice not to vote. With that type of responsibility, let's do it reflectively rather than just reactively.
Well said. Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is with us, Associate Professor of History, Chair of the History Department at University of Northwestern St. Paul, and author of Patriotism and Piety, Federalist Politics and Religious Struggle in the New American Nation. And let's dig into this just a little bit more. You introduce us in the book to some pretty distinct groups in post-revolutionary America. You talk about the Jeffersonians, the Baptists, and the Federalists. And what were some of the key differences in how they viewed the way faith should impact public life in the new nation?
Right. So let's take us back in time 200 plus years. We've had the American Revolution. We've won our independence from Great Britain. As Americans, we say yay to that. We've said, we need a better structure of government. Let's have the U.S. Constitution. I would still say this is a good thing. Then people said, but the problem with the Constitution is it doesn't have all the protections that we expect. Let's have a Bill of Rights. Okay. Bill of Rights is ratified, added to the Constitution. Of course, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's the ground rules. That's the ground on which then American Christians are going to be operating and thinking about politics in the period from the 1780s, 1790s, 1800s. So with that background, then Americans are forming a government, but they're not entirely sure or clear which direction that's going to go. And so, in fact, you see in the 1790s the development of two different political parties, one that we might broadly call the Federalist Party, and these were the people that I spent a lot of time reading with, and the others would be the Democratic Republicans, the Jeffersonian Party. And we might just in passing say the Federalists were the party of Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton, of course, is really popular these days. If you're interested in Hamilton, you should read my book to find out about some of his colleagues.
Well done.
So what the Federalists are saying is, well, we need a coherent national government, a coherent form of institutions. And they want to develop a culture that breeds a national identity. And in that, one of the key issues that comes up is religious faith. What role should religion play in this new republic? Okay, we're not going to have a state church. There is no National Church of America. But what role do churches play? Because, of course, even back then, there were lots of different denominations, Congregationalists, Presbyterians, Baptists, Methodists. They're all floating around. What difference does that make?
And if I may just add, that was the only system they'd ever known, right? The established church in England, in Scotland, that was the only history they'd ever had.
in the 1780s and 90s, they're moving very quickly away from this idea of a state church. Think a tax-supported church at the state level, right? So the state church of Virginia, the state church of Massachusetts, right? Minnesota never had one. But you can imagine if all Minnesotans paid taxes to the official church. Well, they're moving away from that. So we're probably not going to have that, but what do we want instead? Although let me pause and say in New England, where it was congregational churches, the Federalists actually support that. They say no national church, but if Massachusetts wants a state church, if Connecticut wants a state church, if New Hampshire wants a state church, they should keep that because it's helping institutionally. So they might call it a state option, if you will, about state churches. And the Federalists are saying we need a type of public expressions of Christianity, right? Not mandated, but that there can be good cooperation between Christians and the government, right? Not overlap, but cooperation. And the idea there would be that the government, if it's going to be a self-governing republic, actually needs Christians to be very active in it. Why? Because Christianity produces virtue, right? The good morals that self-governing citizens need. And on the other hand, they would say the government, whether that's at the state level or even at the national level, can actually not force Christianity, not mandate Christianity, but encourage it, right? That it's teaching the people something to say, hey, you should go to church on this Thanksgiving Day or on this day of fasting. Or simply to say, it would be good if all of our citizens prayed today. And that these did not run afoul of the First Amendment. They merely were expressions that could tie the people together.
Well, it's fascinating stuff as we hear Jonathan Den Hartog, Associate Professor of History, Chair of the History Department at UNWSP. The new book he's referencing is Patriotism and Piety, Federalist Politics and Religious Struggle in the New American Nation. You referenced in your response, and I thought this was fascinating. In the book, you detail President John Adams as saying that he had a desire to, quote, patronize every institution for propagating knowledge, virtue, and religion among all classes of people, and that they were, quote, the only means of preserving our Constitution from its natural enemies. Can you maybe open up the window even a little further on why he held that belief?
Right. Well, you have to remember what John Adams was responding to. When he's president 1796 to 1800. This is the exact same time that the French Revolution is going on. It's going off the rails. This is the time of the terror when the guillotine is being used to actually execute tens of thousands of French citizens for disagreeing with that revolution. And the French are making noise that maybe they'd like to go to war with the United States. So in the face of all of that, I think Adams has a right to be a little bit concerned, right? Yeah. The Federalists really are concerned about how is our republic going to continue? And they would say, yeah, there are enemies, right? The natural enemies of the republic. What are they? Well, sure, you can have opponents from outside. Definitely, you have to have strong defense, but you could also have dangerous ideas coming in from the outside, ideas that would undermine the republic, right? That would call you away from self-government. And internally, I think what Adams is really pointing to is this idea that nations can devolve, that they can lose the capacity for self-government, right? So if you are a republic, small r republic, what do you need? You need citizens who can be self-governing. And if you don't have the moral character for that, you're going to be in trouble. How do you do that? The churches have a role. I think Adams would also say schools have a role, right? There are lots of instruments of culture that come alongside to make us the type of citizens who can be self-governing.
One of the things that stuck out to me in the response there is thinking about back to the time of the French Revolution, so many of the French revolutionaries saying that these are the ideals of the American Revolution taken to their logical degree, right? In a sense, these were the ideas of the American Revolution, in a sense, devoid of any faith and any constraint. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yeah, there's this interesting question of how much the American Revolution played into the French Revolution or how much the French Revolution was its own thing. In the early stages, there is, I think, a lot of inspiration that the French draw from the U.S. Great example of that. In the early stages, the Marquis de Lafayette is there and encouraging gradual reform.
Sure.
Okay. Over time, though, what happens? Those moderates get pushed out. And the revolutionaries who take over are drawing on intellectual systems that are very different than the American system. So if you look at, you know, what are the philosophical streams that go into the American Revolution, in addition to Christianity, there's a lot of English thought, you might even say some John Locke, that goes into this. By contrast, these more radical Frenchmen, I think of Maximilien Robespierre, are influenced by what we would call the French Enlightenment. People like Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And these are people who are hostile to faith and who actually believe that humans are perfectible, right? And that's an idea that you don't see in the American Revolution.
Understood. Wow, that's fascinating stuff. Thank you for going down that rabbit trail with me. I appreciate that. So great to have Dr. Den Hartog with us today on the road here on Faith Radio. You mentioned Alexander Hamilton before, and I can't resist asking, what in the world – I mean, we talked about the $10 bill a little bit and the potential plan to overhaul the bill. They actually went a different direction on that, of course, and the famous musical that's on Broadway about Alexander Hamilton. What in the world is the wellspring of this fascination with Alexander Hamilton? Why do you think this is taking place in 2016?
It is rather surprising, right? You don't say, I know, let's write a Broadway musical based on rap about a founding father. But yet the country says, hey, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's actually exciting to me. I haven't gotten tickets to Broadway yet. I keep telling people if they want to gift them to me, I'd be happy to you know, go.
Yeah.
But I have listened to the musical and I enjoy it quite a bit. We should tell listeners it is probably R-rated. It's not
sure.
It's not for young children. But what I love is the way that it makes a connection that says the founding period is not just dull people in stuffy wigs. It's people struggling with human questions, human experiences that might actually speak to us today. And as a historian, I love that perspective, right? They're not just us in powdered wigs, but they are people that we can relate to. Yeah. And so anything that gets people interested in the American Revolution, I am all for. And so I suspect I will be playing some clips from the Hamilton musical in my classes this fall to bring students in to say, hey, this is important. This is relevant.
I know that this is an unfair question in a way because it speaks to so much of what your book does, Dr. Den Hartog. But you really lay out the case that the Federalist influence, even though relatively in terms of the life of a political party, it was very brief in American history, that their relevance in shaping the way that we interact with religion in our public life was really quite indelible. What makes you say that?
Yeah. And this might have given people pause when they said the Federalists. Wait a minute, I haven't heard about them. Maybe I haven't heard about them at all, right? As a party, they only last down to about 1820, right, when they kind of dissipate. A lot of their positions are later taken up by the Whig Party, later taken up by the Republican Party. But that's several, you know, steps removed.
Sure.
So then this goes to the great question of, so why do we care? Right. And my response really is, as you pointed out, no, there's something long term of significance in this. And my suggestion is they articulated very well this connection between virtue, faith, and citizenship as important. But I'd also say that they have this understanding of how do you create institutions. Right, that Christianity is not simply about individuals, it's also about institutions. And so they go on to say, what kind of institutions could we build to really shape American culture? And I do a deep dive into the founding of the American Bible Society, right? The American Bible Society is founded in 1816. That means they're celebrating their 200th anniversary this year. But there were many others that they said, we are a national Christian society. We're a voluntary society. We don't belong to one denomination. We belong to every Christian who's going to get together to work in this kind of area of endeavor, whether that's Bibles, tracts, Sunday school movements. And what these institutions do is they shape the national culture. And so my suggestion in the book is that we could even talk about this as a federalization of American Christianity. That's a phrase I'd like to, you know, spread all over the country. But American Christianity gets federalized with this insight about the importance of institutions for shaping culture.
Understood. Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is with us, Associate Professor of History, Chair of the History Department at University of Northwestern, St. Paul, author of Patriotism and Piety, Federalist Politics and Religious Struggle in the New American Nation. And we knew our time was going to go quickly, and certainly it is going quickly. We have about 5 minutes left, Doctor. As you wrap up the book's epilogue, you made a point that I found oddly hopeful, which is to say that this debate over the role of religion in our government, in our public life, this is not a debate that has been happening simply since 1980. This is a debate that has been going on since the very founding of our country. I found that to be an oddly hopeful comment. Did you find hope in that truth as well?
That's great. You read that and you picked that up, because as I was researching this, I thought this is a great kind of antidote for the people who kind of go over the top and they say things have never been this way.
Exactly.
Right. Things have never been this argumentative or polarized. And you can say, actually, in many times in American history, they have been. Right. So we all need to take a breath, realize that there are differences, even have strong arguments about those differences, but realize that we're not entirely in uncharted territory. It's okay. And it's even okay to argue about the place of religion in public life. That shouldn't shock us. And I think for Christians, we also shouldn't be shocked when we realize, oh, there were times of waxing and waning faith in the country as well. This is the other piece of what I think is hopeful about the book, is that the 1790s look pretty bad to a lot of the Christians at that time. They see the French Revolution going on. They see people writing, get this, popular books trying to debunk Christianity, right? Before you have the new atheists of the 2000s, you had the old atheists of the 1790s.
Right.
I think here of Tom Paine. We think of Tom Paine as author of Common Sense and this American icon. But in the 1790s, he comes out and writes about how the Bible should not be believed because it's unreliable.
Come on.
And there, of course, I should say he was not an atheist. He was technically a theist who just did not believe the Bible at all. and so these could be very frightening times.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the Federalists were rightfully on edge. But they don't just give up and say, we're going to take our ball, go home, and cover up our heads with a blanket. They say, let's get involved. Let's take all of the energy at our disposal and try to do multiple things at once, right? Let's proclaim the gospel, right? There's a lot of evangelism that goes on. Let's form institutions to continue this so it's not just a little flash in the pan. And let's talk about politics, right? That politics is a place that we can work. Not the only place, not the ultimate place, but one place to get involved. And they did this all simultaneously. So I think that might be a place of hope for people, for listeners.
Oh, and that's a great, great point to end the discussion on today. We've been talking with this good man, Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog, Associate Professor of History, Chair of the History Department at UNWSP, and author of Patriotism and Piety, Federalist Politics and Religious Struggle in the New American Nation. We do not want to say farewell without the opportunity given for you, my good man, to say how can we get this book if people are fascinated by what they've heard today.
Great. Two steps. First of all, I'd be delighted if you'd like to buy the book. It's available at Amazon.com, available through BarnesandNoble.com, and I'd like to say anywhere fine books are sold. The second follow-up, though, is if this sounds interesting, hey, think about the history department at the University of Northwestern. I am thrilled with our offerings, with our courses, and with our faculty. I think this is a strength of the university, and we would love to have students and their parents who are interested in history come check us out.
Well, it's been a real blessing to hear from you today, Doctor. Thank you so much for stepping into the studio today and offering your font of wisdom to our listeners today.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's been great.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.